here. Okay. Then he explains what does it mean, the chaimimos frehen, which as I said means and with money that's left over. So Rashi explains, Mokru Sephori, let's say that they sold scrolls of the Nevi'im or Ksuvim, the Lokhul Mimiktsas Hadomim Torah, and they spent some of the money for a Sefer Torah. So it says, Lo Yikru Min Habosor, then you do not take from whatever money remains from after the sale, right? Dovor Shekedushosei Pechusa. Use that money in order to buy something which has lesser holiness. Okay? Now, the Gemara starts to analyze the Mishnah. It says, "Bnei ho'ir shemachru rechayv shaliyah." This, of course, is the beginning of the Mishnah, right? In other words, people of the city who have sold the square of the city. So, Omar Rabba Bar Rabchonis, so Rabba Bar Rabchonis said, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, name of Rabbi Yochanan, he said, "Zu divrei Rabbi Nachim bar Yosi Stumot." Says, this represents really the view of an authority by the name of Menachem, the son of Yossi, but it's not mentioned who it is. Stumasol means that there is no name mentioned over there. Nevertheless, according to Rabbi Achona, it's only his personal view. Avol Chachomim Oimrim, but he says, the sages say, Horachov, when it comes to the public square, Ein bo mishum kedusha. There is no holiness in it. So we see already that there is a difference of opinion over here. On the other hand, Rabbi Menachem bar Yossi, my Tamo. So tell me, what was the reason of Rabbi Menachem bar Yossi who said that there is kedusha in the public square? He says, Hoyel ve'om is palalim bo v'tanis ma'amonos, inasmuch as people do hold prayer services over there on days of fasting and also the days of Ma'amonos, he says. Ma'amonos, if you remember, we learned that also in Gemara and Titus, that Eretz Yisrael was divided into 24 different districts, and each district had a week, and then they would rotate it again. And it was a week in which they would come to the Beis HaMikdash, but the people back home also would hold services at the same time that in the Beis HaMikdash, their representatives, Kahanim, Nevi'im, and Yisraelim, were present for the sacrifices that particular week. Okay? So, inasmuch as there were public prayer services held, alright, so in that case, according to Rabbi Menachem bar Yossi, therefore also had holiness. However, for Rabbanan, Ahu Ekore Balda, the rabbis who say that there is no intrinsic holiness in a public square, so they say, well, no, those only happen to be occasional events, but not something that happens all the time. Okay? Alright. Then, the next Mishnah that they analyze, the next part of the Mishnah is, Beisach Nesses Lokim Teva, that if you sell a shul, then you buy an Oren Kodesh. So Omar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani said, Omar Rabbi Yonas, again the name of Rabbi Yonas on this line, he says, Lo Yishanu El Beis HaKnesses Shal Kfarim. We're talking here only about shuls in villages. Abol Beis HaKnesses Shal Kvachim, Kevin Levi Alma Asule, Le Motsum is on the lay. When it comes to big city shuls, then in that particular case, inasmuch as it isn't just a little place where people come only on an occasional basis, but people are coming all the time into these places to daven, then in that particular case, and they come, they almost, as it means, not just locally, but also people come in from other areas as well in order to daven. So in that case, they cannot sell it, the havalei the rabbim, because it belongs to the community as a whole and is not a private place. This is what he says.
Well, he says you can't sell it at all.
Can't sell it at all. That's what he's saying. As I told you, under modern circumstances,
things
it doesn't necessarily
changed.
Work.
Right.
But in those days, this was true. Okay. Then Amar Rav Ashi, then Rav Ashi said, "Hi, they can ishto the Mosem Achasya." He says, "A certain shul in Mosem Achasya that happens to be a big Jewish town in Babylonia. Apol Gav de Miyama also, even though many people came from outside in order, you know, that they not just shul members, but others came in order to daven, right? But Kevin da Dato de Dika also, inasmuch as they're there only because I have literally the Deya. You know what Deya means? Literally, yeah. Deya means understanding, but Deya also means that, you know, right. I have the
privilege,
the rights, or something like that, right? I have the final say. This is what Deya means.
Yeah.
I have the final say in it.
Deya, yeah.
So, Ibe is a Dinala, right? So, if I decide that I want to sell it, then in that particular case, I can sell it. So, that's the answer to, you know, the private shuls. That there are people who they set up their own shul and sell it. I mean, I've seen it, you know, that let's say Rebbeim will come in, Rebbe, and he opens up his own shul, so he lives in one part of the house and the other part is a shul and sell it. And,
where would you place Rabbi Shankov?
Rabbi Shankov? No, Rabbi Shankov was the rabbi of the shuls of the city.
Really,
right?
He tried that's the impression that he was the control of it.
Yeah, of course.
But he didn't own them. He was like the chief rabbi.
No,
right.
Yeah,
but he didn't
that
own
he
them.
Mentioned before
yeah.
that when A.
No.
Jacob turned from what the Dutch that was the collision with the
yeah, well, I don't know, you know, I know that they did it, but I don't know, you know, exactly what went wrong over there. Because if you remember, he was the rabbi at first after they moved to Long Meadow, and Kalman was the chazan over there, okay? And then, I don't know, there was a collision with the Oaken family. I'm sure Gobi knows more about it than I do. Right.
I may be wrong, I don't want to delay, but it seems to me that some of the men that I knew at that time who were the really the financial strength to do anything in the city did not want Shankov to build at that time.
Yeah, that's quite possible.
But he wanted to build the show.
Well, I think part of the problem was.
But I heard him say.
He considered himself to be chief rabbi of Springfield, and
that's the same point.
Yeah, but all the little shuls, so he had control of Beth Israel, Kester, Bnei.
But you use that word loosely because shuls are run by board of directors.
I know,
and
but he felt
and he's
that
in the higher up.
Shuls are
But at any rate, as you can see, if a person has a shul that he builds privately, then in that particular case, according to this opinion, he has the right to sell that shul. Okay?
But if he sells it, does he use the proceeds for a higher, more holy thing?
Hold it. Okay. Maceway. So they ask a kashak like this. Okay? Yes? Yeah.
Did the decisions that have been made in contemporary time to sell shuls in what I would call changing neighborhoods?
Right.
To Christians or just other organizations.
Yeah,
were responses of Postkin later on.
Yes, exactly.
Contemporary Postkin.
Yes, correct. I mean, it's not mentioned over here, but this is already in response. Obviously, I mean, they consider the angle. So they ask the kasha upon this. What is the kasha? So they quote, Omar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda said, Ma'atzim Beis HaKnesset Shom Tum Siyim Shehoi B'Yerushalayim. Says there was a certain shul in Jerusalem which was, it belonged to the Tur Siyim. The Tur Siyim, so according to Rashi, these are coppersmiths, okay? In other words, it was customary, and even in Europe you had it yet, that
each
people would go right according to their profession, they would own their own shul so that they would feel at home over there. So the coppersmiths would have one, and the Schneiders would have another one, and so on and so forth. Okay? So this happened to be a shul which belonged to the coppersmiths. It was Yerushalayim. Shemecharuha the Rabbi Eliezer. They sold it to Rabbi Eliezer. The Yosef Bor called Tzvachot, and you know what he did? He did use that for whatever purposes he wanted. In other words, his own personal business, whatever he did. We'll take a look at Rashi afterwards and we'll see what it says over there. Okay? So, at this particular point.
Who used it? Rabbi Eliezer used it?
Yeah, after they sold it to him. And that was his private property. Do you understand?
And he used it for whatever he wanted.
Yeah, and he did it for whatever he wanted. So they say, oh, awesome, the Krakim Hava. So, but look, this was a city which belonged in. I mean, this was a shul which belonged in the big city. That's what we mean by Krakim. Which we said before, since people come in from everywhere to it, therefore it belongs to the public and not be sold. That's what we learned just a few minutes before, right? So the explanation I'd give that even though this little shul was, existed in Yerushalayim, but nevertheless, he based Knishta Zutahave, right? This was a very tiny shul, okay? The Indu Avduha, and they did whatever they wanted. Okay, so we'll stop at this point first in order to read the Rashi. It's good for us to study Rashi too. Okay. All right. So Rashi begins where you see the Gimel Mem that means Gomorrah, all right? The Gimel Mem is Gomorrah, right. So, so first of all, they quoted the statement. Remember, they said that the Mishnah must be in accordance with whose opinion? With Rabbi Menachem, okay? The Hedya Aminin says the Tosefta, and we immediately read it in the Tosefta, he says the Megillah, and Tosefta belong to Megillah, the Hu Amara, because there it says specifically that this was the opinion of Rabbi Nachman. So we didn't know over here, but he guessed that it was, and we find that Takas Azai. It happened that way that we have the proof of the Tosefta. And then it says, Hoil Va'omis Palin Bobitanis Mamonis. Remember, this is in connection with the public square. We learn, that they daven there on fast days and on Mamonis. Kiditnam Maseches Taniris, as we learned in Maseches Tainis. Avru Eile, if these passed, in other words, the earlier fasts had passed, where they had special prayers, but, not bringing it to the public square. Velona Nu, and they were still not answered by rainfall. So Motzin is Hatevel Lerchov Ha'ir. Then what would they do? They would take the Oren Kodesh actually out into the public square, right? And then it says Tosefto Ma'amodos Tanan. Yeah, that's the Tosefto, right? And then it says Ma'amodos, and as far as Ma'amodos is concerned, Tanan, we learn Miskansin Ba Rehen. We learned that they gathered together in their cities, the Koran Masei Bereshis. This is the people back home, that they would gather when their particular Ma'amod was in the Beis HaKnesset, was in the Beis HaMikdosh, right? So back home they would gather in their own shuls, and they would read the chapters, Bereshis, in other words, first chapter of Bereshis, okay? The Tanya of Ma'amora, and then we learn the Gemara, Anshe Ma'amod, Nechdosn Beis HaKnesses, right, that the people of that particular Ma'amod would go into the shul, the Yoshvin Arba Taniyos, and they would sit down and observe four fast days. Arba Taniyos by Shabbos, here by Shabbos doesn't mean that Shabbos they didn't fast for that four fast days, but it means four fast days during the week. The word Shabbos sometimes means week, okay? And they say, Efsha Beis Knesses, Hoy Elohim, Kavua Bechovah Shoviyah. So Rashi says, well, maybe they had a shul which was actually located in the public square. Wisconsin, Shama Mahmud, Kulay Kadesh, Bikurim. And maybe all the people would get together over there, even as we learned in the Mishnah of Bikurim. That kol ha'yorah shebe ma'amod miskansen ha'yorah shel ma'amod v'lonin b'chevish ha'ir. All right, now this deals with another holiday. What is the holiday of the first fruits?
What
is the holiday of the Bikurim, the first fruits?
Shavuot.
Yeah, it's for Shavuot. All right. So we have a tractate in the Mishnah which tells us about what is the procedure when the farmers, the Jewish farmers, and don't forget, you know, practically everybody had trees in those days, right? And they would see the first fruits on the tree, okay? So we learned that they had to put those aside. What they did usually is to tie like a little string or something around it so that they know that this fruit was the first one to grow, right? And then they would gather it together and put it in baskets, and then they would make the pilgrimage to Yerushalayim. But if you live far away, then they would have to make several stops on the way and spend the night. So what happened? Of course, Shavuos time, I don't have to tell you, the weather is not what it is over here in October at this point, okay? It's nice and warm, and so what did the people do? They would sleep in the public square on their way to Yerushalayim, okay?
Now, what were they carrying? Is this where
they're carrying their baskets, right?
They would carry the baskets. This they're not allowed to sell and put
no,
them
no, the no, that has to be brought. No, that's something else. That's what we call Maaser Sheni.
Right.
That's a different thing.
That's a different thing.
This is fresh fruit. They had to bring it to Yerushalayim, right? And then they presented it on the altar, and they recited a special recitation together with the Kohen, and then this was presented to the Kohen as a gift. This is what happened. Okay?
We got a lot of food.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So they would sleep on their way to Yerushalayim in the public square. The Loha Yonichdosin Rotin, the Loninshan. But they would not enter anybody's private homes in order to sleep over there. The Hoya Mimuna, and then the man who was in charge of this group, Omer, he would say, Kumu v'na'le Tzion, come, let us go up into Zion, El Hashem Lakenu, to the Lord our God.
That's a song.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, it's a verse that we find in the book of Yirmiyahu. Okay. So, Hola Marato, from this we learn, Kinus Ayoros Birchov HaYisov, that people would gather in the public square of the towns, right? But he says, afterwards, the Gemara says, V'akrai hav, right? But it was only something which happened on an occasion. Shema matazeh einu chozeh cholilo ad chatzi shona. Because in the case of the Ma'amad, for example, they would not return again that way until a half year had passed. Because, as we said, since 24 divisions, so after you have, you know, after you had 24, we still have more weeks in the year, another 24 weeks. So they would go, you know, the cycle would again be repeated, but it means 6 months would pass before they would come once more. Of course, you'd say to me, there are only 48 weeks according to this, and we figure how many weeks, 52 weeks or something like that. Well, okay, for this we have two explanations. Explanation number one is that doesn't necessarily have to correspond to the secular calendar. As we know, we have our own calendar, right? And secondly, you still have to fill in a gap because of the festivals. For the holidays, the Yom Teva.
Well, that was not included in the...
No, it was not included because, you know, then they would need... then you had mobs coming to the Shalim, and you'd have to have... you'd have to mobilize your Kahanim and Levim and so on in order to be able to handle... you know, the needs of the people over there.
And what about leap year? You had a whole other...
And the leap year, actually, you had to do it right, of course. So then you had another month, right? Yeah. But, you know, we're talking about the pilgrimage festivals, in other words, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. Those are the pilgrimage ones. Not that people didn't come other times, but the central idea of the pilgrimage was on these three festivals. That's why we call them the pilgrimage festivals. Okay. Okay. Excuse me. With Tamidei Rabbeinu Yitzchak Halevi, now he says, among the pupils of Rabbeinu Yitzchak Halevi, who was a contemporary of Rashi, so Matzosia found Ma'amodes Negasin. He says, actually, they should not include the word Ma'amodes, only what? About Tanios. Meforish, because he explained Shalohi sought Filoson Barakovat Khan. Okay. He said that the prayer did not necessarily have to be in the public square and the Mahamadas, because where would they go into? They go into the shul. So it doesn't mean that it necessarily had to be. But as I say, it depends. Take your pick. But at any rate, what do we see? According to the opinion of the rabbis, the public square does not have permanent kedusha, because it's only on a temporary basis that it is used as a holy place. Okay. So that therefore it's permissible to sell it. Okay. All right.
It's a silly question, but I don't understand how you can sell a public square. I mean, who owns a public square?
Well, that's a good question, but the answer is it belongs to the public,
yes.
But they figure maybe they'll sell it to some private enterprise. We have what we call public domain, you know,
right.
So, you know, where they can support somebody, you know, for some other purpose, right.
Well, he said eminent domain is where the public takes a private enterprise.
Yeah, I know,
Not selling a public.
This is correct. I'm aware of that. But what I'm telling you is that over here they feel, you know, that's a somewhat similar situation, that's all. I don't mean that this is exactly what it is, but it's something along the same lines. Yeah, that's true. Okay, getting back to our Gemara right now. Okay. Well, yeah, all right, so we can do a little bit more. Rashi, there isn't too much more. He says, Aval Shel Krakim, but it was a shul that belonged to, you know, in a big city, so how about the Hu Botek and Nesius de Rabim? Then these belong to the entire, community. Kol Balein, and everybody is a boss there.
Where are you?
The Yem B'nei the Rashi. The Yem B'nei Ha'ir Levadom Ba'alim Lehem. And in that case, the people who live in the city are not the only owners, because others come in, according to Rashi. Okay. And what are Tursium? So he explains these are Sofia de Hoshes, coppersmiths. Okay. All right. So now we come to a different area. So much about this. Okay. We'll learn about them until about a quarter to eight or so, and then we'll call it a night. Okay. Now, we have in the Torah something that we call Negoim. What are Negoim? It's a leprosy. Okay?
What is it?
Leprosy.
Negoim.
But. Negoim. Right. Okay. So, leprosy can occur in various situations. Torah speaks, of course, primarily of leprosy in a human being. It has, you know, different symptoms of what leprosy would be. And of course, it's up to the Kohen, who should be an expert on these things, to decide whether a person is Tommy or whether he's okay, not Tommy. Then it mentions two other areas. One of them is, for example, in Begodim,
clothing,
that there's a possibility. And then the last one they also mentioned is in a house,
the
Goyim B'Bayis.
How do you connect it to the flow of things here?
We didn't get to it yet. Give you a little background, first of all. All right. Now, here we come to the connection, okay?
Where's the connection?
All right, the connection is as follows. It says over there that when you come to Eretz Yisrael, and the Torah says that, right? Then you're going to find sometimes what? You're going to find a negav, all right? Or it's a ras, and so on. You're going to find leprosy, beveis eretz achuz hatzchem, in a house belonging to the land that you own in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so this leads to a new drash, if you wish. Okay, and what is it? It says achuz hatzchem mitami b'negoy, your own private property. You understand? Your own private property. That's achuz over here. So he says that can become afflicted with leprosy. However, v'yein Yerushalayim mitami b'negoyim. But Yerushalayim will not become afflicted with leprosy. Okay?
The house could be, but not the city.
Right, not the city. So Amar Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda said, Ani lo shamati yelam kol mikdash bilvad. Says, I heard it only in reference to what? To the area of the Beis HaMikdash. Right? But as far as I can figure out, he says, shuls, bote medrash, you know, houses of study, they can become tummy, even Yerushalayim. This is what he says. So am I? Why? So he says, ho de krakin havu, right? Because these shuls and the bote medrash do not belong to what? To the Beis HaMikdash, but instead they belong to the cities, the big cities. Okay, so that they are, you know, like the property of somebody. Okay, so that therefore it can become that way. So Tana Kama Sovar. Okay, I skipped the I skipped a couple of lines. Very important. Okay, Ema. So, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, however, we say that Rabbi Yehuda said, Ani lo shamati el mekol mekudosh bilvad. Okay. I heard that the teaching is not the only place which is not tomei is the Beis HaMikdash, but any sanctified place, mokem mekudosh. In other words, shul, the Beis Medrash, will also not become afflicted with leprosy. Okay. So they say, but my Kamiflige, so tell me, what is the basis of the difference of opinion between them? So he says, Tana Kama, first authority who was mentioned, Sovar, he was in the following opinion, that Lo Nischalko Yerushalayim Lishvotim, that Yerushalayim was never divided so that it should become the property of any particular tribe of Israel. The Rabbi Yehuda Sova, but Rabbi Yehuda was of the opinion that Nischalko Yerushalayim Nishvotim, that Yerushalayim was actually divided among tribes. Now I have to say, to begin with, the first opinion that Nischalko Nishvotim makes a little bit more sense, because why did David HaMelech decide to capture a city which was called in those days Yebus or Solomon, and certainly was inhabited by the Yebusim, the Jebusites, okay, and make it his national capital, because to a certain extent he wanted to be the king of a united kingdom. I mean, don't forget that prior to him, well, all right, Saul was the first king of the United Kingdom, but nevertheless, after Saul died, we find that at that particular point, there were those who were loyal to the family of Saul as the king, and on the other hand, the tribe of Yehuda wanted to boost David, because David came from Yehuda, okay? So they felt that he was the legitimate king. So David wanted to have a capital which would be like in Washington, D.C., the same idea. That it would, right, it would belong to everyone, but it would not belong to any one particular shape. Right. So that this is a point of difference, however, as we see over here, right? The Tanakhama, the first authority, who says that Yerushalayim never is going to have any leprosy in it. Why? Because Yerushalayim did not belong to any particular tribes. Okay. But Rabbi Yehuda, Soval, Nischalko Yerushalayim Mishvotim. He is of the opinion that Yerushalayim actually was divided. Now, on what basis did he say that Yerushalayim was divided among tribes? So he says, "Vflukto dahani tanoi." Says this is like the machlokes, is like the difference of opinion of certain previous tanoim, authorities of the Mishnah, the Tanya, who taught ma hayo bechelko sheyudo arabayas hadeshoches v'hazores. Says that part of Yerushalayim, that is part of the Beis HaMikdash, was part of the territory of Yehuda. And what are the areas within the Beis HaMikdash which belong to Shevet Yehuda? First is the Temple Mount, the Har HaBayis, right? Now the Shochos, these were the rooms that surrounded, that were around the walls of the Beis HaMikdash. You had all kinds of chambers over there. It could be chambers that, let's say, were used in order to storage things, chambers for the Sanhedrin, chambers for the Kohen Gadol, where the Kahanim kept their different garments or vestments in order to, and so on. So you had all kinds. And, of course, one of them was, if you remember, the Nishkas Hargozis, literally the chamber of hewn stones, and this is where the Sanhedrin had its court, okay? So, where the various rooms that surround, that were part of the temple wall, and, you know, that faced upon the courtyards, that also belonged to whom? To Shevet Yehuda, he says. And he also says that even the Azoros, in other words, the courtyards themselves, like there was the Esras Noshim, the courtyard where the women would come in, the courtyard where the altar stood and so on, okay, so the part of the courtyard over there, this also belonged to the tribe of Yehuda. On the other hand, what belonged in the territory of Binyamin, you know, Binyamin is north of Yerushalayim, it's general rule, but in this case, Binyamin would be actually the northern part of the city of Yerushalayim, okay? It says there you have the Ulam, the Heichol, the Eskoche Kodoshim. There you had the area wherein we had the most sacred part, the most sacred buildings of the Beis HaMikdash, and finally also it contained the Holy of Holies. In the other places, you know, the Ulam and the Heichal and so on, you had...
Was it in the western part?
No, it's actually to the north. No, it's to the north.
But the Kodesh HaKodeshim was in the western part of the prison.
It faced west. Yeah, but it faced west, but it was located in the north. Okay. And he says, there was a strip, he says, a strip of territory, which started in, which was part of the territory of Yehuda, but it wound up in the territory of Binyamin. And there the altar was built. Because remember, I said, it said before that the Azoros, that was in Yehuda's area, right? But where was the Mizbeach? It was still located in the Azora, and it was not, you know, where you had other things, like, for example, the Mizbach Haktoris, in other words, the special altar upon which incense was offered, or the Shulchan, you know, where they had the showbread, or the menorah, that all belonged in the area already which was given to, which was part of Binyamin, okay? But in this strip of land, I don't want to call it a no man's land, but rather it was a strip which belonged to everybody.
Common land.
Yes, and so this is where the Mizbeach was built. The Hoya Binyamin Hatzadik Mitzvah Alecha Bechol Yoyim Bevolava. And Binyamin, the righteous, he felt very bad about it every day because he wanted it really in his own territory. Shenemar, he wanted Mizbeach in his territory too. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Chofe for love kol hayom. He hovers over it. This is in the last chapter, you know, of the Torah, where they have the brachas that Moshe gave to the various tribes. And speaking about Yom, it says, Chofe for love kol hayom. In other words, he hovers over it all day long, and so on. Therefore, he applies it to over here, the Chachamim apply it to the fact that Binyamin wanted it, that the Mizbeach should also belong to it. So the Fichach Zocha Binyamin, for this reason, Binyamin had merit, and he became the host, so to speak, to the divine presence, inasmuch as the Holy of Holies was located in territory which belonged to Binyamin. Okay?
Doctor, what is
yes.
Yehuda's authority for this?
Pardon me?
Where does he get this, Robert? Where does he get this all?
Where does he get what?
This division of the Beit Mikdash between Shevet Binyamin and Shevet Yehuda.
Okay.
Where does he derive this from?
It's a tradition. He has a tradition to that effect, okay? He has a tradition, a tradition.
In other words, this was some kind of an oral history
But, I mean, you've been to Yerushalayim and you know.
The common territory.
We still haven't found a connection, though, between this little story
and
the... are we trying to find out whether it's community property or not?
Correct.
And whether, can they then assume that because of this private, that there might be some leprosy?
Okay,
let
me do just one more sentence and we'll call it a night. We'll go do the Rashi and then we'll call it a night, okay? He says, Vahai Tano, and the person who holds the opinion that Yerushalayim was never divided among the various tribes, right? It says, Zohar is an opinion, Lord Nishalku Yerushalayim Mishvotim was never divided up among the tribes. The Tanya, because we have a tradition which says, Ein Maskirim Votim Yerushalayim Ibnei Shenon Shalohet, that you cannot rent out homes in Yerushalayim because ultimately, there is no such thing as private property in Yerushalayim. It belongs to all Israel. That's the idea. You understand? It belongs to all Israel. So that Yerushalayim belongs to everybody.
It doesn't apply today.
Yeah, it does apply today. Today, if you want to buy yourself an apartment in Yerushalayim, we
have a lot of money.
Believe me.
This is a
dose.
Two arms and
two
legs.
Well, Yerushalayim today was the hobby of everyone.
The Yashim, right.
Wasn't part of the
Well, you're right. I mean, the city has expanded since the days when it was Ir David, the city of David.
Well,
right.
Always an expanded
That's correct. City. Right.
Well, yeah. So why are they discussing this? They started with the leprosy, which could be even in a
Okay. The leprosy, right. The idea of the leprosy really is only in order to prove that what? Where does it happen? It happens Achuz Hatzchem. Something which belongs to you privately. There it's going to be.
Right.
So, again, what is the parallel to the situation that we're working with? We're working to the fact that where are we permitted to sell a shul? If it belongs to us privately. Right. But if it's common property, then in that case it belongs to all Israel, then we don't have the right to sell it. This is the idea that they're trying to develop. Right. So you can see,
it goes far afield.
Okay. But this is the way it works. Okay. All right. So I just want to do a little bit more Rashi. Okay. Right. All right. So we said, En Yerushalayim etame bin Goyim. Right? Yerushalayim cannot become, Tomei cannot become defiled through leprosy. The lav achuzahi, because it is not private property. So he says so, okay? Kedamin lekam, as we say a little bit further on, as we saw just now, the sphere lay, he's of the opinion, the high tana, that the noldest chalk of Yerushalayim is Shvatim. Yerushalayim was never divided among the various tribes. The leinof lo begorol. And it did not, therefore, it was not apportioned by the lots, you know, which in the days of Yehoshua determined where the various tribes were and so on and so forth. Lo Yehuda was never given over to Yehuda, but lo Binyamin was never given to Binyamin. Okay. And then they corrected the opinion, right? He says, Ani lo shamati, I never heard, he says, Shelo yehe mitame elo makom mikdosh bilvad, that only the place where the base of mikdosh stood, only that would be free from, you know, the goyim. The shum, the bayis shel kodesh, because it is a holy place. But the gabi, the goyim, right, it's written, uvar shelo habayis. The kohen has to come to someone who owns the house in which it is, right? Be'in it, this is what we require. Avo Yerushalayim etame b'negoyim, but Yerushalayim can become the Sovar Nishalkalishwatim, because he's of the opinion that Yerushalayim Taka was divided among various tribes, and therefore for Achuzaschem Kaminulay. And therefore it means that private property did exist in Yerushalayim. Understand? So, Katani Mihas, however, we learned the Rabbi Yehuda, the Islay Nishalko, that the Loshanu Elamakom Mikdosh. So, even though he believes that it was divided, but he says, what do you mean, Makom Mikdosh only? Aval Botek Nesus, what with Rosh Hashanah, Sheboah, Kishoah Botei Ha'ir, you say that the Shuls and the Botei Medrash are like any other private house in the city, Afagav the Shalkrachu, you know it belongs to it, so therefore he changed the reading to say, I didn't mean Mikdosh, but any Makom Mikdosh, any holy place. So Av Botek Nesus, Mashma, that includes that, and that also could never incur any negoyim. Okay, because it belongs, it's a holy place, and therefore belongs to all the people of Israel. And how about the Har Bayis, which we said this goes to Yehuda? It says, "B'knisoso mitzad ha-mizrach, kol ma sheyesham ponui kori Har Bayis." When you come in from the east into, you know, the Temple Mount, so every place that you find over there, which, you know, the expanse of it, is called the Har Habayis. She'ein lo shem achir. It has no other name. And, okay, so this is it. We'll stop tonight.
I'm just
right.
And I have a question. There is one opinion that part of it did belong to Yehuda, and I would assume they'd have to agree that part of it belongs to Benjamin as
of
well.
Of course, obvious, obviously.
The thing that comes to my mind is when they did come.
Okay, first of all, what day is today? Oh, it's the 30th. What day is today? It's already the 30th of October in 2002. We are currently Maseches Megillah, and we're on Chof Vav Amud Aleph, towards the bottom of the page, in other words, 26a, down at the bottom. What we were dealing with at the end of last week's shiur was prompted actually by the Mishnah to begin with. The Mishnah, remember, speaks about the fact about the sanctity of a shul, and is it permissible, you know, to sell a shul, and if a shul is sold, what can you do with it? And then we saw that in general in the Mishnah, they spoke about the fact that you could sell a sacred object, not just necessarily a shul, but a sacred object, but it has to be, the money has to be used for getting something even more sacred, okay? Higher in the ladder of being sacred, okay? And that's what the Mishnah dealt with. So, in the course of the discussion last week, at the end, we mentioned the fact that there was, that the Beis HaMikdash was divided as far as its territory is concerned, according to one opinion, and according to the other opinion, Yerushalayim was never divided. I mean, basic idea was either Yerushalayim is Chalkol Shvatim, in other words, Yerushalayim was portioned out or was divided among tribes, in which case, of course, it would be Yehuda and Binyamin, or, according to the other opinion, that Yerushalayim was never apportioned to the tribes, and that therefore Yerushalayim had a very unique status, not belonging to any of the tribes. So, last week, when we told, read the story about the Beis HaMikdosh being divided between Binyamin and Yehuda, and the fact that those parts of the Beis HaMikdosh which included the yards, that is, the courtyards, excuse me, okay, the courtyards, and there were three of them actually, in the Beis HaMikdosh. The first one was the Ezras Noshim, the women's courtyard, and then you had the Ezras Yisrael, the courtyard of the Israelites, and then finally, even more sacred than that, you had Ezras Kohanim, okay? And then there was the Mizbeach, right, the altar, and then you had the Heichal, the Kodesh Kotshot, in other words, the most sacred part, and that was part of Binyamin. And where the Mizbeach stood in the middle, according to this opinion, was on a special little strip of land which sort of jutted out between the two tribes and was, I don't want to call it a no man's land, but it belonged neither to Yehuda nor to Binyamin. Okay? And this, of course, is based upon which opinion? That Yerushalayim was divided among the tribes, because otherwise it wouldn't mean anything. Okay? And, of course, the very beautiful medrash that we had over here, namely that Binyamin, the righteous, you know, wept over the fact he wanted so much that, you know, the holy part should be in his territory, and so Hashem granted him that. Okay. Yes.
It was said that Binyamin was the only, there was four righteous people. Who were the other three? it said here, you know, Binyamin was the...
So, tonight we continue, first of all, with part of the other side of the discussion for a few moments, and then they go back again to the original. Okay. So right now, we are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay. 6 lines from the bottom. Okay? All right. Beginning with the second, with the third word. Okay. No, that belonged to the previous one about Binyamin, that he became literally the host of the divine presence. And the fact, you know, that the holiest areas within the Beis HaMikdash were situated in territory of Binyamin. Okay. So that is accordance, as I said, to the opinion that Yerushalayim is Chalkol Ishvatim, that it was divided among the various tribes. On the other hand, the Gemara continues, V'hai Tanu Sova, Loi Nischalkol Yerushalayim Ishvatim. And on the other hand, we have another Tana, in other words, another teacher of the Mishnah, who is of the opinion that Yerushalayim was not divided among the various tribes. The Tanya, and now they cite a quotation in order to show that this is also a legitimate point of view. Namely, we have a statement which says, "Ein maskirin botim Yerushalayim ifdei she'einon shelohem," which means that we're not allowed to rent houses in Yerushalayim because it doesn't belong unto them. So this, of course, is a question. What are we talking about? So the answer is, we're talking about now that when people come on a pilgrimage to Yerushalayim and the Shalosh Regalim, so they're not allowed to rent an apartment. They're not allowed to rent a house from somebody. Why? Because this has to be an act of chesed on the part of the people who own the property. But we also say that in reality they're not the true owners, because of Yerushalayim, right, if it doesn't belong to any particular tribe, you understand, then it means that no tribe really had a nachalah, in other words, had a possession in Yerushalayim, and therefore people who owned houses in Yerushalayim, they were not the ultimate balabatim, but the Beis Shalom was the ultimate balabas over there. Okay, it's a special condition. All right, so that therefore, what happens to these people who come on pilgrimage? The answer is that the owners of the various houses welcome them and do not charge them anything for staying over there during the time that they're there for Yom Tov. Okay?
Didn't you also say at some point that they camp? Actually,
yeah, well, this was true particularly on their way down, that they would sleep in the broad places, Rehov HaShalir, you know, that they would lie down over there. Obviously, they must have brought sleeping bags with them or something like that, right? And as I told you too, I mean, generally speaking, the weather is very nice in Yerushalayim at the time of the various festivals. It's either spring or summer or early fall. and the weather still hasn't gotten nasty in Jerusalem, so that wherever they made the pilgrimage from, they were able to lie down on the ground over there and be able to sleep. All right. But in Yerushalayim itself, people would extend hospitality to them to come into the homes, so that they are not allowed to rent homes, for the during the time of the festival. Okay? Mm-hmm. And not only that, but Rabbi Eliezer, Bertzodek Omer, he says, Afle mitos, not even beds could they rent. Don't ask me why, but in other words, we're supposed to furnish them beds, as a courtesy. Now, because of that, they owe something also to the host, right? So, what do they owe the host? So it says, L'tichach, for this reason, Oros kodshim balei yishbizin notlin ayson bizroah. Now, there were different sacrifices, naturally, that the pilgrims would bring to the Beis HaMikdash. And if it were kodshim, particularly what we would call kodshim kalim, in other words, a Thanksgiving offering, a peace offering, something like that, then in that particular case, what did they do? The animal had, first of all, to be skinned before they could eat it. Okay? So what do they do with the skin or the hide? I mean, an animal, it's a hide, okay? The hide of the animal was given to the balabas where they stayed. But according to this statement, the balabas could insist, he could demand that they give him the hide of the animal, okay? That was used, to provide the festival meal over there, okay? Not to know some as well. They could take it literally by force, okay? Omar Abaye, so therefore Abaye said, Shmamino, from this we learn that Orachara, that the right thing to do is the Mishpach Inish Gufo Mashra Bishpise, that a person should leave over with his host his gulfo. Gulfo is some kind of a vessel, which a jug or something which he drank, okay? His drinking utensils, whatever it was, and also the leather, or in other words, the hide, and he gave it to the balabas. Okay. All right. Now, the second line from the bottom gets back again to the original business. We were talking, remember, in the Mishnah. Yes, I'm sorry. Is there a question?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
This doesn't apply
to modern
times.
No.
This is only
when it's a base. Well, the base of interest is in existence, no question. And of course, you might ask a different question, too. Was this, let's say, only the original part of Yerushalayim, or would it extend, to modern Yerushalayim or something like that? But I don't have to tell you that in modern day Israel, they don't go on this place. That instead, you pay.
You don't have to tell.
Right, okay. Apartments cost geld, as we would say in French, of course. Very expensive and so on, right. Well, but people come to visit. But if they come to visit, either they come and they stay with relatives, right? Or they go to a hotel or something like that. In those days, they didn't have all the fancy hotels that you have in Yerushalayim today. And hopefully the hotels will once more be filled with people, because a lot of them really had to close up for a long time. Yeah, yeah. My oldest granddaughter, Yerushalayim Penina, who's now a mother of three, her husband, part of his job is as a mashgiach in the hotel. So when you had this, people stopped coming and so on. So they closed up the hotel. They closed up the kitchen. Yeah. It's a new one right near the Shar Yafo. I forget the name of it already.
The Pearl,
right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Right. So every once in a while, you know, he comes in for a Shabbos in order to be the Mashgiach over there. Yeah. Okay. All right. So now we get back again to the original problem that was discussed at the beginning of this new chapter, namely, what do you do with a shul and you want to sell it? Okay? So Omar Rava said, he says, Loi shanu ele shalei mokru shiva tuvei ho'ir b'mabad anshei ho'ir. Avo mokru shiva tuvei ho'ir b'mabad anshei ho'ir. Afilu l'nishta, etc. So let me say what we are learning at this moment. All right. Rava said as follows. He says, where it said that in order to, that when you sell something, right, which is sacred, and so you have to use that money to do what?
To buy
something higher. Otherwise, you cannot sell a shul. Okay? You cannot sell a shul.
What's higher than a shul?
Well, we said, I mean, like an Orin Kodesh is higher than that.
Sure,
right.
Just a building.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, at any rate, he says, where they say that you cannot sell the whatever it is, whether it's the shul or whatever it may be, this is when it was not sold by the seven notables of the city in the presence of the general populace of the city. Well, I tried to find something special about how did they get the Tuvei Ho'ir. I'm sorry to say that so far I have. Were they elected? Were they picked by somebody? Who made them into the Shiva Tuvei Ho'ir? My suspicion is that maybe, I mean, it's like, for example, who are the people here in Springfield who would be Tuvei Ho'ir?
No,
it depends. In the shul, we would know, right? But right, but certainly, as far as federation is concerned, there's no question, right? People who give the geld and the ones who normally aren't the Tuvei Ho'ir, right?
Didn't they do that? Didn't they buy the east wall seats?
In the shuls, sure, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. They were given the place of honor, right. Except for the great scholars. I mean, the Rav, right. So, but for a Balabas, you know, if you had money, you sat in the Mizra. See, that was the most desirable place where to sit. Okay. So, if these seven notables of the city sold the shul, and they did it so in the presence of the populace, in other words, it was with their consent and also with the populace. I mean, you know, there were no protests about it. So in that particular case, then we say that if, you know, where they didn't have either one or the other, then in that particular case, the shul could not be sold. Okay. But if you had the consent on the part of both of these people, both of these groups, then in that particular case, you could sell it, even a filu. And now we go to the next page of the base. Group number one would be the seven notables. Group number two would be the general population of the city. Okay? So, and in that particular case, you could sell it even the Mishta Bay Shikra. Right? You could sell it even in order to drink liquor in it. Now, obviously, drinking liquor, you know, it's not the great. I gave it to everybody, yeah. It's the second page. It's not the greatest thing in the world, even though, you know, Kiddush is nice and the Chaim is nice and everything else, but I mean, you're going to turn it, you're not going to turn it into like a saloon, you know. That's not fit, right?
Booze?
Yeah, Shikra is booze, right. Yeah. Strong drink. That's the translation. Of course, you realize, I mean, it's related to the word Shikra.
I'm trying.
The two words are related, of course. In the Bible, they use the word shechar. Yayin v'shecha, wine and strong drink, right? Some say it's beer, some say, you know, I don't know whether they had rye or scotch in those days. Yeah. But at any rate, the shechva would be the Aramaic equivalent of the word shechva. Right. Okay. Or, as Rashi says, right.
Going the wrong way.
Yeah, you can use the money either to drink the stuff or to buy, or maybe to manufacture it. Okay? All right. But at any rate, I don't have to tell you that. In other words, what does it show? That if they want, if they consent to sell it for, you know, a non-holy purpose, they have the right to do it.
They do?
Yeah, the Tuvei Hoyer and the general population. Okay,
so you
kind of right. Right.
Well, not necessarily. Just showing that they could sell it for something.
They could sell it for something which is right, which is, let's say, profane or something.
Yeah. They could give it to charity. They could do a lot of things. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So they actually, if they vote for it, they can do almost anything with the building that they choose. Is that the
It was by general agreement.
By general agreement, right. So are we then saying that technically, because it's just the building, in itself there's no intrinsic holiness?
Well, once they sell it, right, it loses its holiness. You're right. You're right.
Appurtenances have been removed.
Exactly. Exactly. In other words, as long as it held, pardon me?
This is Rava.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So our practice stems from this.
Yeah, right. Obviously, I mean, because as I said last week, you know, we're familiar with the fact that as a neighborhood empties out, what are you going to do with the shul? Nobody there.
So
it emphasizes the fact that the holiness is not in the structure. The holiness is in
what it contains.
Well, and what it stands
there is a certain amount of holiness in it. Okay.
For what?
There is a certain holiness. Certainly as long as it contains. But once there is nothing in the shul which is left, which is holy, no Sefer Torah, no Ark, no Shulchan,
right.
No
walls,
nothing,
the
right?
Walls.
Right, just the walls, so then it loses its state of being holy, right?
So that, you know, as long as it proceeds and were used to purchase something higher, it doesn't really matter whether the shul will be sold, the building itself, to idol worshippers, right?
Right. This would be the general implication, right?
Well, are they still obligated to use the funds for something higher, though?
They should.
That
they should, no question. But nevertheless, you see from this that if they decided to sell it and use the money in order to buy drinks, they can do that too, right? Once the holiness is gone, then in that particular case, right? But it requires the consent, as we see, of the populace and the leaders of the community. Yes. Right.
You can sell the basic asset less than you say, not permitted to buy an Aron Kodesh.
Right.
Now,
correct.
I don't understand the transition. Was it that the money would be used to buy drinks? Wasn't it rather that the building itself would be used to have drinks in it?
That's quite possible.
Not that the Jews were selling it and using the money to buy drinks, it's rather that the purchasers were turning it into some sort of like...
Yeah, that's a possibility. But the point is that once the holiness of the building is gone, then in that particular case it could be put to whatever use they want.
Okay.
Right.
Understood.
Okay, all right, just wanted to...
Yep.
But he was talking about the proceeds of the
The proceeds could be used to buy things.
Yeah.
The proceeds would have to be used to
buy. I'm talking about turning it into a
yeah. Right. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's a high class saloon. All right. So anyway, Shapidomi, that's okay if this is what happens with the consent again, as I said, the Tuvehu here and the Ma'abad and Bideho here. Okay, in other words, everybody is in agreement that the sale.
So they have an executive board
right.
And a general board.
Right, okay.
No, no.
General membership.
And the
general membership.
And the general
membership.
Right.
Right. Right. Right.
The membership.
Yeah. All right. Rabina, then they bring another example again. Rabina, Havale Hahutila, the Vekadishna. Okay. You're familiar with the word tell. What is tell?
It's a ruin.
It's a ruin, exactly.
Yeah.
Right. It's a ruin.
Yeah.
A ruin. A ruin, right. So, Rabina happened to have a piece of property which had in it a shul that had existed at one time, and now it was just a ruin. Okay? Okay? So also the Kami the Ravashi. So he came to Ravashi. He didn't know, well, you know, what to do with it. Because why? Obviously, the shul still has Kedusha. You see, that's very contradictory, as you notice. Okay, we said that the shul has Kedusha as long as the Shiva Tuvei Ho'ir and the Bnei Ho'ir, you know, don't sell it. But if they don't sell it, I mean, if you don't have the consent of these people, then in that case, what? The shul, even though it lies in ruins, still has Kedusha. There are places in Eretz Yisrael, I don't have to tell you, that, you know, you come over there and you see what used to be a shul once upon a time. They have Kedusha in them.
But there's no
shul. Aram and places like that, for example, you have.
So, what about all the abandoned shuls in Russia, Ukraine, Poland?
What can you do with them? Right. You asked a very good question. The problem is that there's no Jewish population today to take advantage of them. If there were, then in that case they have a right to insist, you know, that they want their shul back. But, of course, I don't have to tell you that in the days of Hitler and Bach Shmoy and his successors and the communists and everything else, you know. Right. Yeah, that's all I say. It's not just Germany I'm talking about. I'm talking about Poland, Russia, etc. Hungary, Romania, Czechoslovakia. I mean, you can name it, you know, wherever it happened, you know, that they slaughtered the Jewish population and the natives of the country. They were just as anti-Semitic as the Germans were in this case.
Right. No ability to sell the building communally.
Right, right. But the government simply confiscated it.
Okay. So the shuls are abandoned. Actually, they still have Kedusha within them, but there are no Jews to use them.
Right.
So then what happens?
So then in that what case? I mean, there's nothing much you can do if the government turns it into something or other. But here and there, Jews have been suing the government in order to be able to rebuild or reuse a shul that was originally there. So, yeah. This is what they've been doing.
In this case, in this case, Ravina has owns the property.
Right.
I thought you said that if you remove all of the Torahs and all the Oren Kadosh and so forth, it no longer has Kedusha.
So from this, what do we see? So from this, we see that nevertheless, not everybody's in agreement. Okay? Even though the halacha follows, the halacha, I mean, happens to be what Rava said. That if it's sold by the Shiva to Avir, etc., then this is the din. But nevertheless, it doesn't mean that because it's the din, everybody's in agreement with it.
So we don't know what we don't know what he's driving at.
All right, so let's finish the story about Ravina. Yeah.
Whatever, you're saying the dean is actually that if everything is removed from the shul and it's so ruined, that there is no Kedusha.
No,
there is
the Kedusha is still there until the Shiva Tuvei Ho'ir and the Ma'amad Bnei Ho'ir decide, you know, that
but if there's no,
there's
no, no, if it's ruined, there's no Kehillah, and there's no seven
it's a good question. However, we're talking about Ravina. Obviously, he lived in Bavel. He lived in a good Jewish community, and the question is, what do you do with the ruins of an old shul? This is what the problem is.
Because if it hadn't been sold, and it had not been
right.
An agreement to sell it.
Correct.
Still retained,
but he owns the property on which it is. So
yeah, but even so, but there it is, right?
He's the owner of it now. It never was sold under the other
king. Right.
So right.
He's the owner.
So he's a Gansapala boss.
Yes and no. He's not, obviously, because if he felt that he was a Gansapala boss, then he would not have to go to Rav Ashi in order to ask his opinion.
It's amazing that...
you understand?
Well, maybe he'd gone to Rav Ashi because he understood what Rava said.
But Ravina himself was a great Rav. He was a great scholar.
Rav and Ravina were the two, the same as Hillel and Shammai,
right.
Six generations later.
Yes.
Haven't we got two different situations here? The congregation that belongs, the shul that belongs to a whole congregation who owns it and manages it, as opposed to, we were talking last week about a man who has a home and he puts the use of one of his rooms
as a shul.
So then that was personal property.
Yeah.
So that's different. That
right.
You don't need the consent.
All right.
So
because
this is his personal property, though.
That would be, if it was in his house, it would be his.
But it's on his land. His land.
Good. But obviously, he didn't feel right.
Well, that's it.
Okay.
I'm
he didn't
sorry.
Feel right about
sorry
it.
Sorry to feel right about that.
He didn't feel right.
That
about
would
it.
Fall into that
right.
Other. Into
okay.
That other
sure. Category. You're right.
So, because he didn't feel right, so what happened? So he came to Rav Ashi to ask him his opinion, right? Okay.
Beverly has a question.
Hello.
Okay. I have a third scenario that's different. This is, let's say, a town after the Holocaust, let's say, where there are no longer any native people left.
Right, Jews.
That Jews that were left that used to belong to the shul or have any ownership or belonging to the shul.
Yeah.
In come a outside Jewish organization.
It's happened.
It says that they have the right to sell it in that they're not the Sheva Tuvei Ha'ir and they're not the
native. Well, they don't have the right to sell it. They have the right to try to rebuild the shul
right.
And you know, demand
right
for its
sell
reuse.
Sell it or they get the right to
not
use
not really.
Museum
that's right.
But however, if they come in and they rebuild it as a synagogue and as a community, don't they then become a community which at some time
is
the real
right.
If you can,
they would become the resident community and eventually
Germany.
They would have to
no,
have
if you can fill up the drink to place the shoes. If you can fill up the place with shoes.
This has happened in certain communities in Europe today.
Yeah.
It happens in some places.
Yeah.
Right.
Not in Poland.
I don't know. I don't think so.
They've been used for unholy, profane purposes.
Well,
they can be cleansed. That can be.
Yeah. I mean, for example, if they have crucifixes
Hanukkah.
Over there, you remove them, obviously.
Like the
stereo
Hanukkah.
Right.
Yeah.
We'd have to assume that when they took them over, that the religious appurtenances were in the shul. So would that, in that case, they would
not necessarily so.
Well,
not necessarily
they,
so. Many of them were confiscated, some were rescued,
most
so
likely taken out of the or put it at the museum in Prague.
Right.
Not the museum.
Yeah.
Sometimes even Goyim hid these, right, that they took it and they kept it, and then after the war,
they
returned
it. They took the cemetery they gave to
right.
College.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. All right, let's continue. All right, so far we left Ravina up in the air. Doesn't know what should he do with that little place. Right, okay. So he comes to Rav Ashi. He says, Rav Ashi, what should I do? So the Gemara continues and says, Omale, so this is still part of what Ravina is asking Rav Ashi. He said to him, Mahul in Israel, tell me, is it okay if I plant seeds in it? In other words, use this, after all, it's a room, right? Use it as a field. So Omale, so he said to him, Zil Sabne Mishiva Tuve Hayir B'Mamad Anshei Hayir Uzra'ah. You want to do that? the first they have to go and gather the seven tuvei ovir, the seven notables, in the presence of the people of the city. And if they give their consent, then you are permitted to plant it. But otherwise, as we see, it still has its kedusha as long as the machas and the community, and the community in general, did not give this permission. So that's why I'm saying, I mean, we don't simply...
What if you couldn't find those seven people?
Well, obviously, we're talking about...
A pilot, a rebel on a steel boat?
No. Earth.
Yeah.
We have to remember. They didn't live in a vacuum. They weren't living, let's say, up in Echves, Sunderland, or someplace like that.
That's an accident.
Months in the place. Schwarzenegger fit in Ayid over there, you know. But they lived in the Jewish community where they had shuls and bayonim and everything else. So obviously, the organized kehillah in those days, they had shiva tuvei here.
It's a pile of rubble. There's nothing there.
But you're talking only about a piece of real estate within the community.
Right.
Okay. But you had a community.
All right.
So that's why he said to him, if you get the permission, then you can do it. But obviously, if you don't get their permission, then you can't.
So who's going to look for permission? And these people are not available anymore.
Yes, they are.
You had to get zoning on your house.
What if all these seven people who were involved with the synagogue are no longer around? They died. They died.
But
they're
these
gone.
Are seven people from the community.
Any seven people. From
any seven big shots in the community. Right.
From the seven good people. It says from seven good people.
Yes.
Meshiva Tzaveh Ha'yo. Right?
Yeah, but I remember, I mean...
Your leadership changes constantly in any...
Yeah, right.
Like Israel has to withdraw from territories, not from the territories.
Same thing here.
It's not definite. It doesn't have to be... This is what gives you this place. I mean, the seven people, have died, moved away. Whatever.
Yeah, but they're replaced, obviously.
That's the point.
They're replaced. It's as simple as that.
It's always somebody in church.
Every Jewish community.
If Wellstone passes away,
right,
so somebody else will take his place.
Every Jewish community had a group of panosim, and then there's three or seven or 12, they were elected. This
but
was
I want
a common number.
Who decided seven?
Why
if there was a tradition to have Shiva to be Hoya, I mean, this was the what a community looked like in those days.
Seven is an uneven number, so you don't have a tie.
All right, in the case of a court, which is true, and the court, according to Gemara and Sadeh, then you have to have an unequal
number.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So. What do we learn from this? So, of course, we see from this, that there is still Kedusha, even if the shul is in ruins, but it still retains Kedusha. Unless,
even
as we said, right. Rome barabo, hava koboni beknishta. All right, now, there's a man by the name of Rami, the son of Abba. Obviously, he was a scholar too. So, what did he do? He built a shul. Okay, guns fine.
Brilliant.
Hava hu knishto atiko. Okay, so it so happened that there was a very old shul around, right? So boy the mystere lasui nivne over the shurim mina the ulua lohasim. All right. So what did he want to do? Kishuri. Yeah. Sometimes my eyesight is not as good as it used to be.
Can okay. You imagine?
So at any rate. All right, so here, all right, there was an old shul there, and he wanted to build a new shul, right?
Yeah.
Get the picture.
Right.
So he wanted to knock down the old shul and to use bricks and beams from the old shul, right, and bring it over there to where he was building the new shul, okay? So Yosef, he said, they call me Bayelei, Hoder Rav Chista. But he said, and he was thinking about it, and he was wondering about an opinion given by Rav Chista, Doma Rav Chista, who had said, Lo Listo Beknishta, Ad Boni Beknish Dachwit says you're not allowed to knock down a shul until you have already built another shul.
But he wants to use the material when he also okay. built a new one.
Yeah. But the point is, he hadn't finished building the new shul yet. You understand? So as long as the new shul is not yet ready for occupancy, then in that particular case, you're not allowed to tear down the old one.
Yeah, but he was intending to use the beams and the bricks.
You're right, we understand. Right, exactly. Right, so he was pondering about that. What should he do? Okay. So they say, all right, why not? So Gemara gives one answer. It says, Hossam, in that particular case, it says, Mishum Pshei Usam. It's because the fact that, you know, people, if they started in already to tear down the shul, even before a new shul is there, they may stop in the middle of the job and then not have a new shul. You understand? Pshei Usam means negligence. Okay? In other words, they might be negligent, taking their time, stopping the work, whatever it may be, who knows, or they run out of funds or something like that, and then, you know, they weren't able to continue. And in the meantime, there's no shul. So therefore, that's why we say, don't knock down the old shul until you have the new shul ready and in operation.
Yeah. Therefore, the scenario where the community has this piece of property, they decide the old shul is too small and it's old-fashioned,
right.
It's going to cost too much to fix it up,
yeah.
But they got all this land, they can't knock down that building to replace it on the same land then.
Well, they could eventually. They could eventually.
How could they get around
well,
that?
Like to they get around
to make a temporary.
All right, establish a temporary shul. As long as there is a place that you're able to come into nothing, obviously.
They could.
Then in that case, that would be the possibility, sure.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a permanent structure, it'd be a temporary structure.
That's possible, right. Right. Yeah, right.
The new shul doesn't have to be completely built.
Under those circumstances, no. But once it's usable, then in that case, we might. No, so it's a possibility, right. Yeah, right.
Interesting stuff here. Yeah,
right.
It's really
amazing. Okay. So at any rate, Kahai Gavnamai. So, but the question was still not resolved. He knew what Rav Chisda had said, but he wanted to know in this particular case, what? How should he proceed? So, also the coming Rav Papa, so he came to Rav Papa, the Ursala. And Rav Papa said, you cannot, use it for an agricultural plot. He refused to give him permission. So, you know what he did? The coming to Rav Huna, he ran to another Rav.
until he gets another right answer.
I wanted a second opinion.
And so what did Rav Huna say? He also said nothing to it. Can't. Okay. All right.
And he's got this land he can't use it for anything.
Right. Well, how much land is involved up there? I have no idea.
Well, if he wants to plant something.
Right. All right, but at any rate, you see, what was their feeling then? Their feeling obviously was that the old shul still had its kedusha, exactly. It still had its kedusha, and therefore it could not be used, for any profane use. Unless, as we said, the opinion that was given, go to the shiva to the yair, go to the people and so on, and if they give permission, then you can do it. Okay. To me, what's interesting is, that they ran to different rabbonim. Technically, you're not supposed to. If you ask a shayla, you should abide by the decision which is given. But a lot of people prefer to shop around. They prefer to shop around.
To more than one road.
Right.
You have to know how to ask a shayla.
Right. Okay, So, Omar Rava, Rava said, High Bay Kedusha, certain shul, he says, Hilufo is Bune, Shori, Gure, Mashkuni, Osar. Okay, he says, in the case of a shul, he says, to get a substitute for it, in other words, to build another shul, right? Or Zbune, to sell the shul, then in that particular case, you know, you can find grounds in order to permit it, right? But Ugure, in other words, just to rent out the premises, obviously not for a shul, you understand? To rent it out for something which is not a shul, or a mashkuna, or to mortgage it, this is interesting, is also, it's prohibited, right? I mean, it's hard to imagine how many shuls in America can get by without a mortgage. One of the first things that the shul tries to do is to pay off the mortgage.
Right, okay.
But the point of the mortgage would be that what if they default on the mortgage?
So
then what's going to happen?
Right.
So that's the reason why they prefer, you know, that's the reason why it says that a shul should not be mortgaged. Okay. Yes. Pardon me?
When they talk about renting out a shul, do they mean the base method part of it, or are they talking about the school grounds?
No, obviously it has to be the shul itself.
The sanctuary.
The sanctuary, right. Sanctuary, the base medrash, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
But in those days, they weren't holding, they didn't have social halls in those synagogues.
They didn't play bingo in those days. What can I tell you? No bingo. They had a lottery in the base on Mikdash, but that was only to find out which coin is going to be honored by doing this, that, or the other one. Okay. That was the lottery. Right.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know. Here the base medrash would be holy, okay? The sanctuary would be holy. Well, I can't say that the social hall is necessarily holy, although we do use it in order to serve Shabbat Shudas, breakfast, and stuff like that. Yeah. Okay. Kena Bissalavaita, as we say in French, okay? Yeah, okay. So we see then that certain things you can do with the shul and others are not. And the Gemara is, my Tama, what's the reason? So the answer is, Big Dusha Sakai. It still is holy, right? It stands literally in its holiness, okay? Lubni Nami, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It is if you grab a finger.
Right. Now, Livne, over here, it's from the word Levena, in the Hebrew, okay? In other words, as far as the bricks, also, Kilafinhu is up to you. You are permitted, let's say, to sell some of the bricks, provided that you replace in the new shul, right, the replacement of new bricks and so on and so forth, all right. Sure, that's also permitted, all right. Was a finhu also, however, to loan it out, this you can't do. You have to, in other words, you are permitted to use parts of it, provided that you're doing what? Either replacing it, let's say it's crumbling or something like that, you're allowed to replace it. And in that case, if there's anything left of it that you want to sell or, you know, give to Goodwill or something, that you can do, okay. But to simply to rent it out, that you can't do, okay. So Gemara says, Hanei mila ba'atikta. What am I talking about? I'm talking about an old shoe, okay. But if we're talking about the new shul, then whatever we said doesn't apply to it, because what, you know, in other words, the bricks, the beams, and this like that, I mean, we're not worried about that. Particularly if they are new, then in that case you can do whatever you want with them. Okay. Va'afilu l'man d'omer, oh, he would come to, even in accordance with the authority who holds, hasmona milsahi, animin kagon ha'oreg, I think that I better stop at this particular point. I'll tell you why. Of course, now we're getting into a very complicated business, and this is called hasmona. Hasmona means, literally, well, today, if I say hasmona, it means that you're inviting someone. Or you make a reservation, hasmona, okay. This is based upon the original idea, a reservation.
Zman?
Huh?
Is it from the word?
Yeah, it comes from the word zman, of course. Yeah. Here, hasmona means that you make a decision that this is what you want to do. And the Gemara goes into a great deal of discussion, not only here, but the Gemara in Sanhedrin, for example, whether it is hasmona milsahi or hasmona lav milsahi. Does the fact that you have in mind that you want to do something with it, okay, does it mean that it's already acquired, you know, the status that this is part of the job? Or does it mean that as long as you didn't actually get started on doing any work on it, then in that case it has no authority, okay? So we'll hold that in abeyance for 2 weeks, and then we'll come back again to that opinion.
The question
okay.
Of authority yeah. Is that what we're saying? The question of authority?
The question is
legality,
whether,
maybe.
Whatever. I mean, is it, does it have any validity or
validity,
not?
Yeah.
That you simply decide in your mind that you want to do this and that. Is it valid, or it doesn't mean anything unless you actually get started on the project that you have in mind?
That's right.
Unless you get started on the project specifically that you have in mind. In other words, if you change your mind, let's say originally you wanted to do this, something, you know, with what you, and then you change your mind, okay? So the question is whether that change of mind is effective or not. Do you have to...